CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, Nicole Danielle will be giving us an update on her yoga programs. So, another session starting up with the ICHA. Let's start with the obvious question. What do you love most about it? What keeps bringing you back to this particular group?
Well, I've certainly gotten to know the students who participate, as well as family who brings the students in, and of course, yourself and the rest of the wonderful people involved with running the show there, Christina. We're all very tight, and I think going online for 2 years brought us even closer. They were right here in my living room, and I was right there in theirs. You know, we were all just in each other's homes. We really just sort of kept continuing to meet every Wednesday at 4:30. That's been going on for years now. And it's so wonderful. I got to see many of the group this Wednesday when we started back up. It's wonderful to see them in person. It was a blast to do it online. It's an honor to have them come and join me every week. And they're so dedicated to their practice. And it's one of my most wonderful hours of my week. I really just enjoy it. I always miss the group so much when we're off during the summer. And it's a blast.
So I'd imagine that being in person versus just online, there's more of a sense of community actually being in the same space. Maybe some mental health benefits. Stress reduction, for example.
Well, yeah, and just to roll off what I just said, you know, I really do think the online, I think it had a lot of great success too in terms of all of that. So as much as I agree with you that the in-person is, there's nothing like it, right, Cam? There's nothing like us being right there together. And I, as a teacher, I really love having my eyes on my students. I love catching eye contact. I love that type of, you know, intimacy and me being able to really support whoever's in front of me with my expertise, just being able to see how I can give them some support. So that's really absolutely priceless. And there certainly was all those same, I think the getting together and the practices we did were beneficial mentally and physically, whether it was online as well. But I can have an extra keen eye on the group when we're in person, that's for sure.
So since you mentioned you've been doing this for several years now, what sort of growth and benefits have you seen for the students themselves?
Okay. So in terms of just the ICHA group, and I can't even think of how many years it's been now. I want to say maybe 6 or 7. It could be more. I've been teaching yoga in general for about 22 years and sort of really narrowing into that speciality of just people with certain needs. You know, I've had to adapt my own yoga practice. I have scoliosis and one leg is slightly longer than the other. So I know bouts of chronic and acute pain. I know postural imbalance. I know that very well from my own practice. And I've really delved into that sort of specific yoga support in the last, I would say, maybe 15 years. So I've seen in general with my students, real just using this practice for preventing and supporting pain and misalignment and just feeling a little bit more conscious of the physical body, a little bit more aware of our patterns. And I would say in general, that's the type of yoga I try to practice, I teach, and I see my students coming to understand and practice on their own as well. Now, in terms of just narrowing it down to the group I see at ICHA, I certainly see really great concentration and memory retention. There's a few practices that we do, and I try to do them quite regularly. I play around with the practice, but I try to keep some things very steady and regular. So there's certain rhythmic practices, there's certain concentration practices, there's certain practices where I've seen now steadily the group has come to really strongly retain information. We're very strong. We really know my cues. And there's such a focus there when everyone really knows what they're doing. They've been practicing this for a long time. And I'm able to, as a teacher, I'm able to throw in those little advances. I'm able to challenge us a little bit more here and there when I see that the group just gets it, whether they're doing a modified seated version or they're up on their feet doing the standing version, and we're all in it together and we're all getting it, and there's a rhythm and there's a real a bond, and we get playful with trying new things, you know, and it's just been a blast. And I see people really learning, and I think quite a few are doing yoga even beyond ICHA class. They're doing it on their own. I know several of my students, they've got their yoga mats and their blocks and their chairs right there in their room. And I always suggest to them, you know, bust that stuff out. Be aware of all that stuff, including the resting, right? I really teach them to rest, and we're getting very good at that too. It's not easy to lay down and just rest and be still, especially with a group of people in person, you know, and to see that sort of practice so, you know, consistently done and really just advancing over these years. It's wonderful.
So that being said, do you have anything in mind to keep things engaging or keep things interesting for the group this year?
Well, I mean, I've always got tricks up my sleeve. I always do the practice based on who I see. I often see the same faces, but sometimes I see other faces. And, you know, I try to keep it very mindful of everybody's participation. So that's my main goal, is the inclusivity and me really having my eyes on people. So I know that it's safe and we're doing it with breath. There's a few basic priorities that no matter what kind of advancements we might play with, there's foundations and priorities that I see as the number one importance of the class. And so for me, my goal is always we're breathing. They know they're honoring their limitations. You know, so things like that that are just going to get stronger and stronger. I'm looking to support strong, healthy bodies, aware, conscious of our movements, whether we're on our yoga mat or playing another sport, doing another thing. What we do on the yoga mat support everything else we do with our life, right? With our posture and our breathing, our responses to challenges. So there's so much. And I, like I said, I've got lots of tricks up my sleeve. Physical stuff, breath work stuff, the rhythmic, the fun, the giggles. It's going to be a blast. Yeah. And Cam, before we say goodbye, and I do want to do a shout out to the University of Windsor and the classes back there are now starting up for the September, the fall semester. I just finished teaching the spring and summer sessions in person again. We're in that brand new, you know, the brand new facility is open there. If students haven't made their way down to the Toldo Center, it's absolutely state-of-the-art, gorgeous facility. My classes, as well as several classes, are going on there. They can find me Mondays and Wednesdays. So all you yoga students out there on campus, come and join me. It starts this coming Monday, the 17th, and that runs through the semester. Okay, and you can talk to the staff at the desk there about getting the all-class pass or just doing single classes. And Cam, before I really wrap it up, just letting them know that during September, on the campus, in front of Dillon Hall, there's a nice big lawn. There's a big grassy space. And I'm there Thursday evenings at 6:30. We've been doing it in September. It'll continue through September. Free, outdoor, on the lawn, in front of Dillon Hall, Thursdays at 6:30. Come practice some yoga with me. Okay, so Cam, thank you for letting me just chat with the yoga, the University of Windsor students there as well. And yeah, thank you as always for having me on. You're the best, Cam.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, M. Rhyme Ifrak will be telling us a little bit about Project Heal. So, can you tell me a little bit about Project Heal?
Sure. So, Project Heal is America's only eating disorder nonprofit that helps pay for treatment for eating disorders and breaks down barriers of access to treatment. So we find that while eating disorders affect everybody at the same rate, different parts of marginalized identities often mean not being able to afford treatment or that treatment facilities aren't accessible. So being BIPOC, being Latine, being queer, being disabled will often mean that while you need treatment, you can't access it. And so we kind of work to highlight that for people and to do what we can to make systematic change.
So how do you go about reaching out to the affected populations?
So we have a bunch of programs in place. Some of our biggest ones are what we call our healer circle. So treatment facilities and therapists and dietitians, eating disorder coaches, they kind of sign up to provide free services. Everyone kind of signs up based on what they can offer. We just had a treatment facility give us something like 10 free residential beds. And then that kind of gets advertised on our website, across the internet, and kind of through all the different eating disorder organizations. And we kind of try to reach clients in that way. We also have a free assessment program. So another kind of barrier to eating disorder treatment is, and I can say this for myself, right? If you're in a bigger body, if you're disabled, if you're in a black body, if you're a low income, you've probably never even been assessed for an eating disorder. So we kind of advertise this as a free program to help people even figure out what's going on. And then we also provide insurance navigation and cash assistance and all of that we kind of just share nationally within our network, and we have a large network within the eating disorder community that we kind of stay connected with and kind of hope that we're reaching as many people as possible.
So I'd imagine that services you do provide, such as assessment assistance, help relieve some of the mental health strain that goes with not only an eating disorder, but potentially having an eating disorder within a marginalized population already.
Oh, absolutely. We get a lot of people And we hear a lot of stories of people that say, no one's ever believed that this is a problem. Everyone has said this should be the least of my concerns. No one's ever even talked to me about this except to tell me to lose weight. I hear from disabled clients a lot, and having a disability myself, my own experience has often been, well, it's because of your disability. Well, an eating disorder actually has nothing to do with your disability most of the time. It could be a reaction to having one. And so I believe that what happens is clients come to us and they're believed for the first time, and that relieves a lot of depression and anxiety. And then they know they have a community of people behind them that are going to help them get the help that they need. And we hope that that also relieves like that secondary mental health strain on their support network.
What are some of the biggest myths or misconceptions about having an eating disorder?
I think the biggest one continues to be that it's really for thin, white, cisgender, heteronormative women and young girls. And that really an eating disorder has a look, which is that very kind of thin, almost sickly looking body. And that, I think, as a myth, has caused the most damage to people overall, because the average person with an eating disorder has usually a average or larger size body. They probably are not white. They probably are not, you know, heterosexual. They probably have other mental health issues and a disability of some kind. But we still kind of focus on this really microscopic view. And I think it's just anorexia was the eating disorder that got the most attention initially, because that's who could afford treatment. And that's a reality of kind of how eating disorder treatment happened. And I think our culture still prizes ableism and beauty over anything, which means a lot of people kind of get left out of our kind of cultural image of what this really is.
So that being said, you can't necessarily distinguish a disability from an eating disorder, it being a mental health concern unto itself, a compulsion. A lot of people...
Yes. And I mean, the reality is... To me, right, and I am an eating disorder clinician, having an eating disorder is no different than having depression, anxiety, PTSD, or any kind of disability. Just because someone can't see it doesn't mean it's not there, and it's certainly not a choice once you're in it. It becomes this thing that overtakes your life and that you kind of need help to manage. And I tell people it's kind of akin to, you know, I need a cane to walk and sometimes I need a wheelchair. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just my body. And if your body has an eating disorder, it means you need to come to me to work through it and create a treatment team. And those are kind of your metaphorical mobility devices in learning how to re-navigate the world.
So in your time with Project Heal, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
There is one in particular, and it's because they were my client, which is so selfish, because I get to be lucky enough to be on this board and work with clients separately from Project Heal. I have a private practice, and then I run a program for another eating disorder treatment company. And I had this lovely client, trans man with a history of chronic illness and very severe disabilities and an eating disorder that was just so uncontrollable. And he really cycled in and out of the different levels of care of treatment. And so there's kind of four basic levels of care of treatment, from hospitalization to kind of a half-day program. And I had seen him at all of the levels of care at my time with him. And on the last time we worked together, Project Heal did this really, such a small thing, but such an amazing thing. So he had a emotional support dog. And unfortunately, in most inpatient units, unless your dog is a service dog, they can't be there. And that's a Department of Health thing that is a whole other argument to be had. And so, you know, this was an animal that needed to have care, right? Needed a kennel, needed to be walked. And that's really expensive for someone who's disabled and low income. And that was the barrier to going to this hospital program. And Project Heal paid for the care of his dog for 30 plus days so that he could go to treatment. And for this particular client, the care of that dog meant A, going to treatment and focusing on treatment, and B, actually going, because he would not have gone without that. And I think for me, it's a reminder that there are barriers when it comes specifically to disabilities that we still don't talk about. And this is a big one. Can you know that the things that you need to function in the world are going to be taken care of while you take care of yourself?
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Ever wanted to be on the radio? Then why not volunteer at CJAM? Anyone from the community can come and volunteer, student or not. You get to host your own radio show, learn about radio and audio production, and much more. Reach out to programcjam@gmail.com or go to cjam.ca to learn more about how you can volunteer.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Nicole Danio gave us an update on her yoga program. M. Rhyme Ifrak told us a little bit about Project HEAL. In this segment of our show, Jess Silver will be giving us an update on Flex for Access. So, can you tell me a little bit about the upcoming event for Flex for Access?
Yep. So, I'd be glad to share with you and all your listeners details related to the upcoming event called the Lift Up Gala Fundraiser in support of Flex for Access. It is going to be, as I mentioned, a gala fundraiser happening on Wednesday, November 16th at the W Event Boutique. The goal of the event is to have many of the organization's collaborators and partnered organizations and individuals that the organization works with and has helped in the past, as well as also university professors that the organization works with, and as I mentioned, individuals and fitness and sports professionals all gather and learn about Flex for Access's work for those who may be new to working with Flex for Access and for those who are not new to be able to understand how the organization has grown and how their organizational support has supported the nonprofit organization in its growth during a time of a pandemic when we've had to pivot as many other organizations did have to as well in order to have a lasting impact. And it's going to be an amazing gala fundraiser with lots of live entertainment, music, and performers all gathered there in order to amplify the mandate of Flex for Access and have a larger
impact. So those who might not be as familiar with Flex for Access, the work that you folks do, can you tell me a little bit about what you do and how it impacts the community?
Of course. So for those who are not familiar with Flex for Access's work and are interested in perhaps getting involved in supporting the nonprofit organization, Flex for Access is a registered nonprofit organization for the awareness of cerebral palsy and other physical disabilities and or acquired injuries, and it specifically provides opportunities for individuals that have physical challenges with the opportunity to engage in adaptive fitness and sport promotion within the mainstream. This was very important for myself as an individual who falls into a special population, having a physical disability and being passionate about health and fitness, and myself being on a fitness journey for over a decade now, realizing that there's a discrepancy between how disability is understood in our society and opportunities for physical literacy and fitness as they are presented to individuals that have these physical limitations within the mainstream. And it's because of my passion for fitness and the necessity that I know that it carries for myself in my life that I founded the nonprofit organization to create these opportunities within the mainstream, because I realized that they weren't so existent within the mainstream. It was more like if I wanted to become physically active and, you know, improve upon my physical condition, I actually had to go to a specific like rehabilitation center or hospital as opposed to going to mainstream gyms and or sports facilities. And I really wanted to change the perception of individuals like myself with a physical disability and also opportunities for physical literacy and fitness. So the organization raises funds for those adaptive fitness-based training sessions, yoga classes, sports programs, and also the adaptive exercise equipment to be placed in facilities that Flex for Access has partnerships with.
So how do you reach out to the affected population, both facilities looking to get adapted equipment and those who could benefit from it?
Great Question. So we've been a nonprofit organization for 5 years now. So a lot of what happens is organizations that already have a partnership with Flux for Access, health professionals, physiotherapists or kinesiologists, for example, will reach out to me, actually, to Flux for Access and say that they have a client base that's in need of our organization support and that they would like to work with my organization. So a lot of it is already by word of mouth, and because the other organizations and exercise facilities and clinics are aware of Flux for Access's work. But otherwise, a lot of the outreach is done through cold calling, as well as also through presentations that I deliver, because I'm also an adaptive fitness consultant and personal trainer myself. So a lot of the other work that I do that's related in scope of Flux for Access, separate to the work of the nonprofit organization, it's actually working with university institutions and or clinicians to teach them about adaptive fitness. So a lot of the outreach happens there, where I will actually reach out to these professionals and organizations as well. But largely, the outreach happens because organizations that are already partnered with, or practitioners that are already partnered with Flux for Access, will reach out to myself, or they'll reach out to one of their colleagues that already knows of Flux for Access's work, and that's how the outreach occurs. As well, the nonprofit organization has quite a large following on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as LinkedIn. So a lot of the knowledge of the organization, the awareness, comes from social media, as well as also our website marketing. There is a very informative website that is live and frequently updated, www.flexforaccess.ca, and that's a source of the outreach as well.
So in your time doing work in adapted fitness and supporting those who are on a similar journey, has there been any success you've experienced that stands out for you?
Yes, of course there has been. I'm proud to say that there has been, and I've actually been told by a lot of the clients that Flux for Access has supported that they've seen substantial differences in their physical abilities and in their performance of daily tasks, as well as also exercise-based tasks. If they find themselves going to the gym, for example, thanks to Flux for Access. And what I've also heard is that Flux for Access has inspired many individuals to actually pursue fitness, largely for individuals who are part of special populations. One of the barriers to them accessing personal training or accessing exercise opportunities to exercise, one of the barriers that I often heard people express to me is that they have a fear of, for example, finding themselves in a gym and being the only individual that has a physical disability or acquired injury. And what the organization has been able to do is to help break down that fear and empower the individuals through confidence.
So how can people go about getting tickets for the upcoming event?
For everybody who's interested in attending the Lift Up Gala fundraiser happening at the W Event Boutique in Woodbridge in Vaughan on Wednesday, November 16th, tickets are currently on sale through Eventbrite, as well as through Flux for Access's website. Again, the website is www.flexforaccess.ca, and it's the word for, not the number for, flexing for something, flexforaccess.ca. And if you hit on the news and events tab, you will see the link to purchase your tickets to the Lift Up Gala fundraiser. Looking forward to having many of the listeners of this radio show there and showing your support for Flux for Access and helping the organization's impact be leveraged. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
My friends, disabilities and fitness, simply an adaptation, new way of doing things. Many cases, someone with an acquired disability will use athletics and the practice of being in good shape as a means of healing, if not the body or the injuries, and certainly the mind, because finding that purpose, that strength in life, can translate into all kinds of other areas of who and what we are. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.